Chapter 8.
When the impossible comes knocking at your door, how do you meet it? Do you curl up in a ball of despair and hide away? Do you leave it up to others to do what you cannot because you're too fearful of what you will find? Or do you meet it with courage? The courage to defy everything you've ever believed in order to get to the truth. With our initial and very logical hypothesis blown to pieces, it was time to earn our modest keep. Unfortunately, the increasingly volatile situation in Connor Creek would make our jobs far more difficult moving forward.
Not to mention that at this point, we had pissed off most of the locals and no one was willing to engage with us.
We had hit a dead end, so we had no choice but to backtrack.
You know that scene in the movie where the heroes stand in front of an enormous corkboard trying to link together all the disparate elements with a ball of yarn? Well, that's where we were at.
We had a collection of asymmetrical puzzle pieces and no idea how they were supposed to fit together, but there was one trail we had not yet blazed. Throughout our stay in Connor Creek, Paul had been following any and all werewolf leads, often irritating and inconveniencing me in the process. But what I once thought to be wasted hard drive space turned out, at the 11th hour, to be worth its weight in silver.
What can I say? I had werewolves on the mind! And I was prepared to talk it out with anyone who was willing to listen.
That anyone was me. Indiscriminately. Anytime, anywhere.
I spoke to myself, too! Besides, unprecedented times call for unprecedented thinking. And if my lifelong fascination with conspiracy theories had prepared me for anything, it was this.
We must have missed something on our first go-around. From here on out, even the wildest explanations were back on the table.
Artemis.
Polly Ollie Oxenfree.
From the American Podcasting Network, this is the Wayward Guide for the Untrained Eye.
On every APN story we produce, we capture hours upon hours of tape. We end up with everything imaginable, including interviews, soundscapes, and even our own thoughts and conversations. The latter is a useful reference as we sift through the raw audio when editing the show. But normally, we wouldn't include those personal clips in the final product.
It would be like turning in an essay where you cite what Wikipedia says instead of going to the source that Wikipedia uses. But that's just what we're about to do because we have no other option.
That night in our room at the Dead Canary, we combed through all of our tape.
Okay, this is Paul. Night 2 in Connor Creek. We just got back from the home of Aubrey Dockweilers, a local historian. And boy, did he have some very peculiar things to say about werewolves.
This is nothing, Paul. All we found was a book with some pages ripped out. Probably because they were filled with nonsense that wasn't worth keeping. Even Aubrey said his grandfather who wrote it was nuts.
Then why was he so cagey when we pressed the subject?
Dramatics, Paul. People love messing with journalists. Let's focus on facts.
But just look around at this isolated mountain town. This is the perfect place for monsters to live. You're telling me that Ryan didn't look like he was mauled by some sort of werewolf?
Different regions have different myths. This used to be a mining town. People probably used to die from horrific accidents or go missing in the mines, so they chalked it up to werewolves as a way to scare kids and keep them away. This doesn't look right. Were we supposed to go left back at that fork in the road?
In retrospect, you were onto something.
Well, Artie, I always followed the facts in this case, even if the facts were hunches.
But you understand why I was resistant at the time, right?
Sure. After a steady stream of killings and sightings, hindsight really is 20/20.
Hi, this is Liam White, president of LAPS, the Los Angeles Paranormal Society, and amateur dungeon master.
When we first encountered the possibility of werewolves, I knew I would need to consult a professional to get my facts straight. Of course, I'd seen every film iteration of the Wolfman, but I needed to learn more if I was going to seriously chase this lead. So I spent some time sussing out the real-life practicalities of werewolves with an expert on the subject, my roommate, Liam White.
Yeah, werewolves are definitely real. Okay, in the last century, we haven't had many documented sightings, but they do turn up from time to time. Like Bigfoot. Or Loch Ness Monster sightings. There have likely been more, but society doesn't give people the space to explore the truth.
So is it true that werewolves only transform during a full moon?
Well, would I say that argument holds up in a court of law? No, there's no legal precedent regarding beasts of the night. But the monthly lunar cycle is a staple of our historical findings. Speaking of monthly cycles, were you planning on Venmoing me for the utility bills? I owe some money to some very intimidating LARPers. Don't screw me on this.
Interesting that you just labeled Liam as both a professional and an expert.
Desperate times, Artie. Plus, he's as legitimate as it gets when you're talking about such fringe ideas.
But the full moon angle didn't really hold water. There was a full moon our second night in Connor Creek, the night we visited Aubrey, but that's one of the only nights there wasn't an attack.
Interesting. And what about silver bullets being the only way to kill a werewolf?
Well, excavations of ancient civilizations have unearthed graves of human skeletons with extended femurs. While many would argue this is a result of human evolution, Laps has confirmed these to be the remains of werewolves. In several cases, small silver pellets have been found lodged in the bones or near the graves, leading us to conclude that this has been a historically preferred way to kill a werewolf. However, our refutable evidence also suggests that the claw of another werewolf is the only other thing that can pierce a werewolf's heart.
And just so we have it for the record, what are the sources you're pulling from here?
Yes, primarily all of the Underworld movies, but not the ones without Kate Beckinsale. She was the backbone of that franchise.
Actually, I thought Rise of the Lycans was the best Underworld movie.
Shut up, Bridget! I'm working! God!
So if silver is a werewolf's kryptonite, it seems sort of dangerous for our werewolf to attack so close to the silver mines of Connor Creek.
The history of werewolves wasn't turning out to be much help. Wow, a sentence I never thought I'd say.
Hey, this is Paul, night 5 at Connor Creek. I just had an idea in a dream. Psst, Artie, you awake?
What?
Okay, I need to bounce something off of you. What if the werewolf is an outsider? Does it even make sense that they live in town? Especially with the silver deposits. That's like tap dancing in a minefield.
It's like 4 a.m. Well, we know murderers most likely know their victims.
And the nearest thing resembling a town is like 70 miles from here.
Yeah, that's a good point. Even at werewolf speed, it would be a full day on foot to get here. They'd have to remain close. Their base would have to be somewhere near the town, maybe even right here in the center of it. Plus, this place is tiny. We'd definitely notice if a stranger was walking around town with blood dripping from his mouth.
Paul.
Sorry, or her mouth.
Paul, can I go back to bed now?
If you were still alive, you were still a suspect, which made our persons of interest list kind of long.
This killer knew what they were doing. They made it difficult to rule anyone out.
You can't just go up to people and say, "Excuse me, sir or madam, are you a werewolf?"
Right. It begged the question, how much confusion could have been avoided if Connor Creek had any security cameras?
Morning Musings, Day 3, Tape 2. We haven't even considered werewolf amnesia. Are we sure they even remember what they've done or who they've attacked after they transform back? And if they don't remember, are they culpable? I'd have to brush up on my criminal law, but I think a compromised mental state at the time of murder is a defense. But how could you prove that? This could complicate things, especially since we have zero f***ing proof.
Paul, you've been in there for 45 minutes and I need to shower. Wrap it up.
Wait, if we're taking amnesia into consideration, how do we know one of us wasn't a werewolf?
What?
Well, think about it, Paul. If a wolf is completely oblivious to their actions when transformed, then it's likely no one was lying when they claimed they weren't linked to the attacks. Even us. Maybe the town's suspicions of us weren't completely unfounded.
Artie, that's not funny. We're not werewolves. That's ridiculous.
Relax. I'm kidding. That line of thinking was a detour that ignored any unified motive.
And if there wasn't a reason to link the killings, then we had wasted our week stringing together unrelated gluten-free breadcrumbs.
Thank you for taking my dietary restrictions into account in that metaphor.
There had to be a connection between the presence of the werewolf and Minor Mole's plans.
So if the werewolf had actually been hiding out in Connor Creek for decades, it stood to reason that the silver didn't kill it. But Minor Mole was the largest operation to ever hit the town. Maybe such a large disruption would weaken it. Maybe, like Ryan, the werewolf was also anti-mining.
But that conflicted with the fact that a lot of the victims, including Ryan, were actively against Minor Mole. Why would a werewolf kill the people on their side, especially if they had been living here in peace up until now?
Making sense of that question led to an entirely new theory. Whoever controlled the silver could use the threat of mining to blackmail the werewolf into killing their allies.
Which brought us back to Silas Torsen.
Silas had the most to gain from Truman winning the election, and the presence of anti-mining activists was getting in the way of that.
And Barney's death may have been the first indication that Silas overestimated his power. Silas was controlling the werewolf to do his bidding by weaponizing large amounts of silver against it. The werewolf was tired of submitting and began to fight back.
Who knows how long it had been going on before we arrived in town? Remember what Silas said back in his office during my first interview with him?
After I'm through here, there's no way the big wigs at Minor Mole don't promote me again. I'm pouring a lot of resources into Connor Creek, you understand? And it's working. This entire town is under my silver spell. We gotta do big things to make even bigger news.
This entire town is under my silver spell. In typical Silas arrogance, he had tipped his hand. We just didn't know it at the time.
And to think that there was once a time you didn't even believe there was a werewolf, only to end up with a conclusion involving mind control.
I know. I'll be the first to admit it sounded cuckoo bananas. But it was the most logical answer we had. Follow the line of inquiry to the end. Silas thought Truman was the answer to his problems. Ryan's platform performed better than expected and threatened Silas's plan. Silas took out Ryan with the werewolf and started to inflict fear in the town that voting anti-mining was dangerous. The werewolf began to rebel and Silas lost control. The killings got out of hand and the town revolted.
So Silas was more than just the white-collar criminal we suspected. He was a cold-blooded murderer in cahoots with a mythical beast.
Exactly. And he was backed against the wall. No drilling was going to get done with the town on high alert.
Our new suspicions gave way to a wave of follow-up questions. Did Truman know the lengths to which Silas stooped? Were the Irons family involved in his plot to pull this off? And how did Silas even find out about the werewolf in the first place?
We didn't know, but there was a way we could find out. Which brings us back to our final night in Connor Creek. Armed with a new theory, I knew Silas would crack under pressure. We decided to leave the Dead Canary and head back to Minor Mole before Silas slithered out of town. But it wouldn't be easy. Folks like Riley Kirkland were patrolling the streets, part of the werewolf hunting task force that was out for blood. But we weren't about to go home without the truth. Even if that meant risking our necks one final time. We had finally completed our puzzle, a clear picture laid out before us. But we quickly discovered that our investigation was only a corner of a much larger puzzle, whose architect had yet to reveal themselves.
Look, Truman, this is getting crazy. How am I supposed to run a business when the town is wrapped up in all this werewolf shit? Look, you promised me the drilling permits in exchange for the resources to beat the Reynolds boy. That's it. Quid pro quo.
What's the problem? You got the permits, didn't you? The deal was I get to do it my way. And this is my way.
All right, Miss Sinatra. This little my way charade has gone on way too long. We're done.
Oh, on the contrary, we are just getting started, Mr. Torsen. Why don't you let me handle the werewolf, and you can keep digging yourself out of that hole you're in. Unless, of course, you'd rather be buried in it.
Threat! That's a threat! Listen, lady, I've been recording all our conversations as collateral, so good luck following through on that. Straight out of my boy Nixon's playbook, I've got the negotiating power here. Call off the task force and make this go away, or I swear...
You don't believe in God, Silas. You only believe in yourself. In the power of greenbacks and greed, in blackmail and bribery. I, on the other hand, believe in the power of persuasion. That even the wildest of beasts can be tamed. And that's why the werewolf listens to me. Just like you do.
Yeah, well, as long as you have control and no one else gets hurt. Deal?
Deal.
Turns out that Truman had been the one holding the reins. But by the time we got to Minor Mole, Silas Torsen was already dead.
Next time on the season finale of Wayward Guide.
Artemis, Madison here. If you can give me a call back, we've made some massive discoveries. You're gonna want to hear this.
Hey, Madison, sorry I missed your call. Wanna text me a location to meet up? Oh, wait. You don't have a cell. Call me when you get this.
Hey, Artemis. Madison again. Oh, Wait. I think you're calling back right now. Ignore this.
Hi, Madison. Hello? Oh, I thought you picked up, but I guess you sent me to voicemail.
Sorry about that. I think I just sent you to voicemail. I just wanted to tell you that...
We're sorry. The voicemail box belonging to...
Artemis Shoehorn.
Is full. Please try again later.
Tin Can Brothers presents Wayward Guide for the Untrained Eye, starring
Mary-Kate Wiles
and
Steve Zaragoza.
Written and directed by Corey Lubowich, Joey Richter, and Brian Rosenthal. Featuring
James Tolbert,
Kirsten King,
Titus Macon,
Cassie Silva,
and
Joanna Sautamura.
Original theme music, sound design, and mixing by Ears Up Sound Design. Executive producers Corey Lubowich, Joey Richter, and Brian Rosenthal, Paul Komorowski, and Greg Gibbons and April Morris. Go beyond the podcast and watch new episodes of the Wayward Guide Companion series on YouTube. Please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. For more information, visit waywardguideshow.com or follow Tin Can Bros on Instagram and Twitter.